The Glue, the podcast about business development, marketing, and communications in professional services.
Welcome to a new podcast called The Glue. I'm James Stringer, a former BD director and now trainer, consultant, and coach on business development, bids, and offsites. This podcast is called The Glue because I think BD marketing and communications teams in professional service firms are the glue that holds the whole thing together.
The Glue, the podcast about business development, marketing, and communications in professional services.
This episode of The Glue is about client relationship management, or CRM, in professional service firms. There is still an attitude in some professional services that the job of managing client relationships can only be done effectively by partners. When challenged on this thinking, there is an implicit or explicit inference that you have to be a senior fee earner to bring value to a relationship between a client and the firm. So is this true? We'll discuss what a successful CRM approach should look like, how you should choose which clients to involve in a key account program, are there firms doing it differently, and what is cutting edge in the field, and more besides. To help me answer these questions, I'm joined by CRM experts Samantha Roberts and Ben Kent. Samantha Roberts is a marketing and business development professional with over 30 years' experience, including roles at BDO, Kingston Smith, Pellings, and for the last 10 years, Deloitte. Her current role is UK Client Development Director, leading on client excellence, client feedback, priority account support, and lead client service partner development. She's also a qualified coach. Welcome to The Glue, Sam.
Thank you very much, James. I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Ben Kent is a director of a search consultancy called Meridian West, which works with law, accounting, consultancy, and property firms. For 22 years, they've been helping firms run their client insight programs and have developed a range of AI and data visualization tools to automate the gathering of insights. He started his career as a lawyer at Freshfields. Welcome to The Glue, Ben.
Thanks, James. Delighted to be here.
So, Sam, let's try and answer my initial question. Do you have to be a senior fee earner to bring value to a relationship between a client and the firm?
In my experience, James, the answer would be no. And I say that because the way that you build and maintain relationships can be done with a multitude of people. And so, in short, no, I don't think it has to be the ultimate fee earner that has the control over the relationship.
Can you give me an example?
The emerging role of the client relationship executive we have at Deloitte and other big four firms have proves that to be the case, whereby those individuals have a really key role in developing and maintaining those client relationships whilst they're not the ultimate relationship owner and are not primarily responsible for the revenue generated in those organisations. Nonetheless, they have a very active and important role in helping the whole account team to really pivot towards the delivery of exceptional client service.
So I think we've answered that one. The answer is a definitive no. We can be heavily involved in client relationships. And Ben, can we define what we mean by client relationship management in professional services? Has it changed in your 22 years?
I think it's quite an unhelpful term. I think too often it's just talked about in terms of technology to CRM systems, but I think it's much more than that. It's holistically how you manage the relationship with clients, and not just the key clients, I think all clients.
And has it changed, do you think? Do you think it has more prominence now than it has had in the past?
I think so. I think a few of the very large clients kind of expect a lot of relationship management, a lot of value add. So I think they're kind of was a real imperative on professional firms to respond to that.
When most professional service firms get revenue from a large number of clients, what other benefits do you think, Sam, of having a CRM approach? And I suppose I mean that both in terms of maybe a key account program, but also more generally a deliberate attitude and program to heighten client relationship management as part of the firm's way of working.
I mean, let's face it, James, you know, many professional services firms somehow need to be able to understand what's going to be right for each client in terms of how they service those clients. Not only do you want to avoid underservicing a client, you shouldn't overservice a client either. So I believe it's a framework that, and it really enables a business to understand where to prioritize, where to be more focused and deliberate and proactive in managing those relationships. Because, you know, one size doesn't fit all. And so it's a way really of prioritizing those relationships and also giving the firm an opportunity to understand better what needs to be done to transform those specific relationships.
So that's the key account program. How about more generally raising the abilities of the firm to manage client relationships?
I would say there's various angles to this, James. If I were an external consultant advising a firm, I would want to ask lots of questions around what capabilities do you currently have in your fee-earning staff? What development opportunities do you have for them to offer them training and development in relationship building and relationship kind of management skills? What is expected of them across the various different roles that you've got? What are those expectations? Because clearly the expectations of someone in a very senior partnership role who has the ultimate relationship owning responsibilities, the expectations the firm has of them will look slightly different to that of someone who is helping and supporting that lower level account management piece. What provision do you currently have to train and develop individuals in this space? Because if there's one thing I have learned about being in professional services for the last 30 years, is an expectation that people seem to magically understand this overnight, certainly when they get made director or partner. And it isn't natural for everybody. And so some people need a little bit extra help and support. So absolutely, you know, I think you can centralize a programmatic approach to the training development, but also the sharing of best practice. There's nothing more powerful, I think, and certainly I see that in my own firm at the moment. Nothing works better than also sharing best practice of what works and what doesn't work.
Okay, so that's an excellent segue through to Ben, who's researching clients' attitudes all the time. Could you perhaps just summarise the key factors that clients cite when they talk about excellent client service or where client relationship management is working well with a firm?
I think it depends on what end of the market. At the top end of the market, I think it's the ability to deliver the whole firm globally, consistently. I think firms have got a lot better at that, but we still get complaints around, oh, I get very commercial advice in the UK and the US, but not in Germany, for example. I think the second area is expecting some of those value adds. You know, they expect training, secondments, sharing of insights, and that's almost the key differentiator between the big firms. How well do you deliver that?
Presumably they take as table stakes many of the things that advisors probably would think that they need to deliver, which is experience, expertise, responsiveness, etc.
That's the impression I get. There's not that much difference between the top, you know, 8 law firms, 8 accountancy firms. And so it really is who brings me insights on what my peers are doing. Can you give me benchmarking? Can you introduce me to, you know, your technology team so we can help and innovate? I think that's the point of differentiation now.
So Sam, coming back to your point quickly about that people don't necessarily know this stuff automatically, what have you found that's worked helping more junior members of the team as they are getting more senior? What's worked to try and help speed them on that journey?
Well, of course, it's that magic dust, isn't it, between what translates common sense into common practice. I think culture of the organisation is key. So is the organisational culture one that is open to all grades to have an opportunity to develop their relationship skills with clients? What help and support mechanisms does the firm have in order to support that ongoing development? And I think certainly things like, you know, what access do people have to the latest insights, to thought pieces, points of view? Do they know how to use them effectively? Because Ben, I'm sure in your experience also, all too often we hear from clients that content is not what they're short of. It's how one is able to tailor that specifically to the needs of the client at the right time.
I definitely agree with Sam on that. I think terrific amounts of thought leadership content. I think what people really want is someone to take that, and it could be a more junior member of staff, have a cup of coffee, pull out the bits that are most relevant to them, kind of explain what else they're seeing in the market. That, in essence, is the kind of the gold dust that clients want, particularly in these really volatile times. And I'd also agree that you can do it really early, you know. And I think strategically using secondments is a really good way of doing that. When I was a young lawyer, I was still a trainee, and I went secondment. Suddenly, it was an absolute revelation. Suddenly, you got it.
And actually, James, I would say that, again, in my experience, I find that many more junior fee earners don't recognise when they are already doing it. When you point out to them and demystify this magic that is kind of business development and relationship management, they realise they're already doing it. Sort of business as usual, and not seen as this something that gets pushed towards the end of the week when, you know, they've got some time left. It should be, you know, part and parcel of all their everyday activities and interactions with clients and referrers and other organisations.
Exactly. And I think it's something that's, it's not an add-on to your day job. It's kind of, it's fun. You learn a lot from clients. It means that when you then work on a transaction with a client, you actually, once you've got that relationship, it goes much more smoothly. So I think, you know, let people enjoy it, you know, is my kind of lesson.
Sam, how have you convinced professional service management teams that this approach is correct, both a key account program and also a programmatic approach to improving the skills, the client relationship skills within their firms, when inevitably, particularly on a priority client program, this will mean that some clients are more special than others?
I would say largely, you know, management teams can't argue with the need to retain the good clients that we have and find new ones. I mean, you can't really argue with that. That's business. And so I think it's an educative process whereby, as long as, you know, professionals like us are extolling the virtues of why it's important for firms to keep, you know, retain and find new clients, actually the rest is relatively easy.
And Ben, if a firm is thinking about which clients should be part of a priority client program, for example, what kind of advice can you offer?
So we have a sort of key client firm at Million West, and I think I think fees is obviously one, but I think also it's those that are going to be with you for longer term over several years. I think also have a group in there that are kind of growth clients. And I think the other piece which is really important is ones you can collaborate with and learn from. I think what we found with certain clients we work with, you know, Allen Overy was a good example, or some of the, you know, the big four, where we're learning as much from them as they from us. And that I think, has an ideal key client.
And Sam, is it always easy to get client partners engaged? And if not, how do you convince them?
On the whole, I know there are always exceptions, but on the whole, of course, it's not difficult to get partners and account team leaders on board with this sort of approach, because ultimately, you know, it is about developing the relationship. And when clients trust you, you're adding value, you're partnering with them, and you're aligned with their strategic goals and ambitions, and you're helping them to achieve their growth plans, you know, these are all ingredients in the mix. You know, it's going to work.
I think one thing I've noticed is the people who are really good key account partners, they tend to be super busy, because they're the same people who are being often asked to lead a practice area or sector. So kind of just their bandwidth is limited.
And my experience of where it works well is that, so I totally agree with you, Ben. It's often quite good, isn't it, to partner someone else with them, maybe from the partnership, maybe a younger partner who can perhaps pick up some of the work that is the administration or the, you know, kind of prepare for meetings, etc., so that the more senior partner then doesn't have to do all of that, but then comes in and has a big impact. Does that work for you, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's certainly a concept that we look at, and it's around, you know, the roles or personas that people have on the account over and above delivering exceptional work and managing projects. Does somebody have that role around more of a rainmaker? Does somebody else have more of an architect role where they are helping to implement what's happening on the account from a strategic management perspective? So, you know, I think firms that do this well have also thought about the roles that people play in managing that relationship going forward, not just in the delivery of the work itself.
How is that measured, whether their partner is having the impact on the client relationship? I mean, you know, at a high level,
it's easier to measure once that's been identified and you know, goals have been set. You know, if you clearly understand what your role is on the account over and above delivering a specific project, then you know how to evidence how you've achieved or exceeded those goals. I think where it's more difficult is where it's just an assumed KPI and hasn't been sort of clarified at the outset. And that's when I think you tend to get perhaps infighting, or people treading on each other's toes. They're focused not on the client, but focused on what's in it for them, which, you know, absolutely has to be the wrong way around. So I think, you know, firms, professional services firms measure success and therefore have a reward mechanism that can look quite different from one firm to another. But ultimately, it has to be linked to some very clear goals of what great looks like to begin with. And therefore, how you evidence that is much easier.
I think with some lessons also from the investment banks. So when we've worked with them, that kind of key account manager role is almost a full-time role. And they get feedback from clients, you know, do you see them as a strategic advisor? So that's the metric rather than kind of fee growth.
So I suppose the metrics could be typically fee growth, couldn't they? They could also be perhaps new service lines or number of meetings that people have been, you know, they've introduced to the client. Are there others that are obvious ones that we've seen?
New relationships. You know, I think when you've got a firm as big as, you know, the Big Four and the bigger Magic Circle law firms, you know, these relationships will be multifaceted. You'll have many parts of the firm having touch points and interactions with many individuals at the client side. And so I think, you know, we would always want to advocate a many-to-many type of relationship because that's what builds relationship strength.
Or asking the clients, you know, how they perceive you. You know, I think two metrics are really important is the consistency of delivery. And secondly, are you adding strategic value to that business? You know, ask the client directly.
So, Ben, is anyone doing CRM differently? And are there any different approaches across the spectrum of professional service firms? Are some sectors more advanced?
I think there are. I think law and accountancy and property have all got a lot more sophisticated in the last 10 or 20 years, definitely, especially the large ones. I think in terms of where we go next, I would look at the technology businesses, really interesting in how they use data to really interrogate client needs and try and predict their needs. And I think also the way they kind of integrate their marketing and the BD is really interesting. So they don't think of, you know, thought leadership campaigns as something completely different from key account management. They're kind of integrated and they use kind of integration of MarTech to automate a lot of that. So I think it's really interesting stuff.
Is there one area that clients are talking to you about at the moment?
I think the one area which I think a lot of our clients are talking about is how you get a kind of all the data you've got on a client in one place and how rarely that is in the CRM system. How do you pull in together CRM data, public domain information on what the business is up to, CRM and client feedback, so you have a kind of, that's all sitting in silos at the moment. So we're working on this kind of tool that will bring it all together. I think that's quite exciting.
And are clients interested in that solution?
Yes, I think they are. And also not just data, but actually, you know, interpreting the data. So if a client is saying this or doing that, what does it mean for us? I think it's understanding that, the trigger.
And is anyone doing that well?
I think most are struggling with it. I think we're just at the beginning of that journey. I'd be interested in what Sam thinks.
Sometimes I think part of the problem is we're getting so good or certainly getting better at such a rate of obtaining data and having big data. The challenge then is, well, where do you store it and house it in one place that A is easy to get to and B is meaningful for a large number of people? And I think that in itself is often the challenge. It's how do you translate all of the various data points that you have in a client journey, be it feedback, responses to invites to events, to marketing thought pieces, etc., you know, conversations that the account team or others might have with the client. How do you harness all of that and make that meaningful MI? You know, that is what most firms struggle with.
And so if we could run the clock forward 10 years, what's the future going to feel like for marketeers within firms when that data is all in one place?
Well, I think that, you know, the people are going to have to be quite comfortable interpreting the data and communicating that and translating it. But I think it will make life a lot easier, actually. I think a lot of the kind of donkey work of collecting data, synthesizing it, I think will be automated. And I think it will enable them to be very much on the front foot, actually, and kind of empower them, because they'll be able to say, you know, we're seeing some data, we think this client is very likely to be looking at this area, and then that's really useful insight you can go back to the partnership with. So I think it'll be good.
So it's actually sort of promoting action and giving insight for marketing teams within professional service firms.
I think that's right, because at the moment, I think we're, you know, all across the profession, so dependent on the fee earners for those insights over coffee and meetings. And I think this will tip the balance slightly back the other way.
You agree, Sam?
A point at which I think, you know, it will be quite a shift in professional services is where we can use the data to predict buying patterns or likely leadership blind spots or other challenges and pain points that clients will have based on their prior buying behavior.
Sounds like an amazing future. I look forward to seeing how you both fix that for the rest of the professional services industry.
Sorry, James. I'd like to add on to that, though. Of course, nothing can, ultimately, nothing can take away the power of being the voice of the client. You're truly listening and understanding and anticipating client needs, because you can have as much data, predictive or otherwise, you know, lots of data points, quantitative and qualitative. But if you're not truly listening to the client and engaging with your client on a regular basis, you can have all of the data in the world, but it's not going to be any use to you.
I agree. And we're seeing this in client feedback. You know, it's shifted from just talking about past service towards much more future looking. Where's your business going? What are your aspirations as a client, as an individual? And that, you know, is a very direct way of understanding what they want and where they're going. You know, you can do, they just tell you, you know, you don't have to do with the data crunching, they'll tell you.
So the last thing I want to do is to thank my guests, Samantha Roberts and Ben Kent. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, James.
We have exciting plans for future episodes, so please look out for updates from me on LinkedIn, and you can find and follow The Glue on Spotify. Goodbye.